Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Gating Strategies. This is with our speaker, Mr. David Merlin. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedy is in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer.
Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very gladly ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedy is in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com, if we look in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or AMJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes all the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known purely for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Though these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedy is in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemedyIsInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features and study groups that Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that altogether make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then it will walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you'll get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points? What are you interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of that if it affects your personal rights in one way or another, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together. Much of how you think of a network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom. It's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, and maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. And maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do where I'm similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look up these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to a point where you've educated to yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedom's Radio. If you're on the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, maybe you're just new to your remedies in the law and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number and the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to your remedies in the law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedom's Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your remedies in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of Americans Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information providers pay Mr. Edward for advertising at your remedies in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that, honestly, most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. And we make those introductions. Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best. And believe you me, we aim for the best. The unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. Again, we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials and see what others have had to say about these products and services. Now, let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if your remedy is in the law, anyway. Of course, when you call the remedy and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider, and even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time.
All right. Lastly, I want to remind everybody that all of our speakers on these conference calls are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that the speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if a question is posed properly and then answered properly, then we can all learn something from it. All right, well, that is my ramble for this evening, folks. I do believe we have a special guest speaker for this evening. So without further ado, it's my pleasure to turn the call over at this time to Mr. Edward.
Well, thank you, Martin. I appreciate that very much. And I am your special speaker this evening. I'll be announcing this two or three times tonight. GW gave me a phone call right after this call was over last week and said, you know, Michael, I think I'm kind of wasting my time here. I think that that anyone and anyone that's going to be getting a fixing or correcting their citizen political status has done so. And so I said, well, I can do the call if you'll still do the work. And he goes, yeah, I'll still do the work, but I just don't want to spend my time on the call and, you know, be talking to myself and then not have anybody even bother to ask a question. He was really upset when the call was over last week and no one asked a question. So I'll be doing the calls. GW will return once a month, the last Monday of every month. He will do the call, just in the event that, you know, to make it available to people, to make him available to people. In the meantime, I will be doing the calls the other 3 weeks. I'll be sharing with you court cases that clearly delineate between someone who is a federal citizen versus someone who is a state citizen versus someone who is also both a federal and a state citizen, yet the question has to be asked upon this question of law, where did the purported crime occur? Was it on federal land? And or was the person on state land a federal citizen? So we're going to go into all of these things in greater depth for your education. And again, if anyone here who has not corrected their political citizenship status chooses to do so, you still will be afforded the same direct conference calls with GW, you know, privately during the week, and we'll process you just like we've processed everyone else before. The only thing that's going to be different is that he will not be here on a weekly basis. He'll be here on a monthly basis. And prayerfully, when he does show up on the last Monday of every month, we will have people that will ask invigorating questions. We've got to do that if we're going to keep them interested in what this group and membership have to offer for him, which is reciprocal to what he offers for you. So with that having been said, and I'll bring this back up when we get to Q&A tonight, is that I'm going to start covering some things with you this evening that are absolutely imperative that you understand, digest, and if you have any questions at all about this one, we're going into the Q&A mode. Please just feel free to ask. Let's talk about the 14th Amendment. All persons born or naturalized in the United States. So first things first, where is the United States? The United States is Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17, which is 10 miles within the seat of power. So all people born in Washington, D.C., all territories, so it would be Puerto Rico, Guam, the American Samoans, whatever, or possessions or enclaves, there would be forts and military bases that are actual United States land. If you go out there in the west, out in Nevada, particularly New Mexico and Colorado, there's lots of places too. You'll see these signs that say, you know, no trespassing, property of the United States. Trespassers will be shot, whatever. This is United States land. It's unique. It's not the land of Florida or California or Arizona, one of the several states in perpetual union. It's different. So it continues, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof, well, that's pretty clear, are citizens of the United States, as it's written, it's a lowercase c, and of the state wherein they reside. There's two words here. It's unique that the United States has its own states, not to be confused with the several states in perpetual union. So you have Florida, one of the several states in perpetual union, and then you have the state of Florida, or Florida State with a capital S. But that would be one of the states of the United States. So you have to listen when, and if you're in court, or when you're reading any legal documents that they want your signature, is that you're looking for these words that identify uniquely Article 1, Section 8, Clause 17. It continues. And of course, reside or residence is a big red flag. It only applies to federal citizens in the several states. It continues, no state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the privileges or immunities of citizens of the United States. Now, that's unique. It said privileges. Why did it say will not abridge the constitutional rights? It didn't say that, did it? It talked about privileges, like the privilege to have a concealed weapon where you go and you get a background check and a permit, and you pay money and blah, 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 and you get all sorts of rules where you can and may or may not carry that firearm concealed. So it talks right there about privileges and immunities of citizens in the United States. Nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, nor deny to any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. So when you look at it through this lens, it's very apparent it's talking about a unique place and unique people. Continuing. Now, this is Kitchens versus Steele, 112 F. Supp. 383. It's a 1953 decision. Hey, it's going to be easy to figure out on the map that 70 years ago, I'm 71 because I was born in 52. Kitchens was a California resident. It says, quote, a citizen of the United States is a citizen of the federal government and at the same time a citizen of the state, uppercase S, in which he resides. It's nailing that person, Kitchens, six ways come Sunday, that it's identifying him as a federal citizen living in a federal state. Next one, United States versus Anthony. We've had seen this one before. The rights of a citizen of the state, as such, are not under consideration in the 14th Amendment. The rights, it didn't say privileges here, did it? It said the rights of citizens, and it's an uppercase C of the state, as such, are not under consideration in the 14th Amendment. Now, what would happen if President Trump, with all these federal lawsuits against him, sit there and say, what are you talking about? I'm a New Yorker. You know, if he's still a New Yorker, I don't know if he's been in Florida long enough. Maybe he's a Floridian now. I'm a Floridian. I'm domiciled in Florida. What are you guys doing here? What are you talking about? Your jurisdiction is wrong. Of course, he's hired attorneys, and they're not going to do that. But this would be the perfect place for them to do it. So it says, the rights of citizens of the state, as such, are not under consideration in the 14th Amendment. They stand as they did before the adoption of the 14th Amendment and are fully guaranteed by other provisions. Next one, Virginia versus Rivers, 100 U.S. 313. It goes on and on. You've also got United States versus Wong Kim, ARC. The full quote, the 14th Amendment did not alter the status of free white persons as previously existing. What is that white person's thing here? Who's that racist saying something about white people? Quote, the 14th Amendment did not alter the status of free white persons as previously existing. End quote. Again, Virginia versus Rivers, 100 U.S. 313. United States versus Wong Kim, ARC, 169 U.S. 640. It's right there, folks. I'm not making this up. Under the 14th Amendment, all persons born or naturalized in the United States are citizens of the United States and of the state in which they reside. But we find nothing in Ruhm, that's the name of a court case, or any other case which requires that a citizen of a state must also be a citizen of the United States. If no question of federal rights or jurisdiction is involved, as the authorities refer to in the first motion of this opinion evidence, the law is to the contrary. Cross versus Board of Education, 243. Gardena versus Board of Registrars of Jefferson County, 160 Alabama, 155, 48 South. It's a 1909 decision. Quote, there are, then, under our Republican form of government, two classes of citizens, one of the United States and one of the state. And again, it's as it was typed in by the court reporter, the word state was in a lowercase s. Next one. Toshiro versus Jordan, 201 California, 236, 256, page 545. 1927 decision. Quote, citizens of the United States does not entitle citizens to privileges and immunities of citizens of the state. Okay, but here they put the state in uppercase S, meaning that it's one of the states of the United States. You see how they're monkeying people around? So it continues. Let me start again. Citizens of the United States does not entitle citizens to the privileges and immunities of citizens of the state, since privileges of one are not the same as the other. Madden versus Kentucky, 309 U.S. 83. It's a 1940 decision. Rights of national citizenship as distinct from the fundamental or natural rights inherent in state citizenship. Again, lowercase s. Rustart versus People, 57 Northeast 41. It's a 1900 decision. There is a difference between privileges and immunities belonging to citizens of the United States as such, and those belonging to citizens of each state as such. Again, lowercase s. Holgate versus Harvey. The governments of the United States and of each state of the several states are distinct from one another. The rights of a citizen under one may be different from those which he has under the other. I mean, I think this is fascinating. I hope you do. Again, in Colgate versus Harvey, this is the tax commissioner of Vermont, 296 U.S. 404, and goes on from there. It's a 1935 decision. Quote, thus the dual character of our citizenship is made plainly apparent. That is to say, a citizen of the United States is ipso facto, and at the same time, a citizen of the state in which he resides. There's that word. And while the 14th Amendment does not create a national citizenship, it has the effect of making that citizenship paramount and dominant instead of derivative and dependent upon state citizenship. Now, what does that mean? That means that when you go into court standing sui juris, that is Latin for in your own right, and the only people that can stand in court sui juris are those people who have corrected their political citizenship status. When you hire an attorney, we covered this before. Let me see if I can find it real quick again, because this is absolutely important. It won't take me a moment here, I believe. Come on, Michael, look faster. There we go, under attorneys. Stand by. Nope, that's not it. There we go. Okay. I'm going to cover attorneys real quick, just as a recap for everybody. You hire an attorney. I sure hope you've researched whose side he or she is on. I know they have spoken to you, and they were so nice and considerate, and they only charged you $60 for a consultation. I'm here to give you some bad news. What I'm about to tell you is only a fraction of the deceit your attorney is involved in. For starters, did you know that your attorney's first duty is to the court and not to you? Well, your attorney's first duty is to the courts. And you say you don't believe it? So look up the case Stokes, State versus Stokes, 243 Northwest 2nd, 372. Look up Harrison versus State, 2311 Indiana, 147. It's sad but true. Now, there are many more cases which state the above, what we just said. It's also my duty to inform you that when you hire an attorney, you then become a ward of the court. Well, that's interesting. A ward of the court. You got protection here, right? Spiker versus Hankin, 188 F. 2nd, 35. Ward of the court is either a person of unsound mind or an infant. Davis Committee versus Looney. What a name. 290 Kentucky, 644. 162 Southwest 2nd, 189, 190. Now that you have deemed yourself insane voluntarily, I might add, I guess your testimony would mean nothing. That attorney does not seem so honest now, do they? But don't take my word for it. Let's see, what happens when we go to Scripture? Look on the chapter, or book of Luke, chapter 11. I'll let you look that one up. So when you hire an attorney, you have lost all of your constitutional rights. You have been deemed an imbecile by the court. And whatever that attorney wants to do with you, to you, they have every lawful right to do it because you hired them to do it. And you voluntarily consented to those that position. You have more power in your finger, your small fingernail, your pinky fingernail, than any attorney has in a courtroom. Now, will they fight you tooth and nail? Absolutely. And that's okay. But they lose because ultimately the end result is something called deprivation of rights under color of law. In civil, it's section 242, Title 42, Section 1983. In criminal matters, it's Title 18, Section 242. What else do we have to copy, talk about here? Again, Colgate versus Harvey. Well, we just did that. Okay. So, United States versus Cruikshank. You've heard me talk about Cruikshank. This is right after the Civil War, 1875. Quote, we have in our political system a government of the United States and a government of each of the several states. Each one of these governments is distinct from the others, and each has citizens of its own. Well, Your Honor, Cruikshank has never been overturned. And since the prosecutor here is charging me with this, that, and the other, I think that I have every right to know the nature and cause of the charges against me. What is the land that this alleged crime took place on? And the party to the crime, who you have identified as a defendant, I'm correcting you, that's a defendant in error, is that a state citizen or a federal citizen or both? And wouldn't that be nice if the state would prove on the record, provide evidence, and answer those questions? Because we cannot continue until that's done. And then if the prosecutor wants to continue, then you add the prosecutor to that that lawsuit. The slaughterhouse cases, a general term, 83 U.S., 16 Wall. Quote, it is quite clear, then, that there is a citizenship of the United States and a citizen of a state, which are distinct from each other and which depend upon different characteristics or circumstances in the individual. So what are the characteristics and circumstances in the individual? Well, I think one of them might be that if you look at your wallet or purse, you can pull out a number of licenses that you have. You might have them in safekeeping at home, or if you're in the medical field or whatever, you might have them posted on your wall in your office. But every time you ask for permission to labor your craft, you ask permission because you're subject to their jurisdiction. You confessed it by your action, by your activity. Someone who's corrected their political citizenship status doesn't ask anyone, their servant particularly, for permission to do anything. Next, United States versus Wong Kim Ark. Quote, the 14th Amendment is, throughout, affirmative and declaratory, intended to allay doubts and to settle controversies which have arisen, and not to impose any new restrictions upon state citizenship. That's state sovereignty, my friends. Continuing. Prior to the adoption of the federal Constitution, states possessed unlimited and unrestricted sovereignty and retained the same ever afterward. Possessed unlimited and unrestricted sovereignty and retained the same afterwards. Upon entering the Union, they retained all their original power and sovereignty. Blair versus Ridgely, 97D, 218, 249. This is 1867. Just a few years. It was clearing up the question of what's happened, because you see, anybody in the know at the time of the Civil War, knew it had absolutely nothing to do with slavery. That was simply the poster child. That was the misdirect. We see misdirection all the time today, don't we? That was the false flag, if you would. What it was about was the usurpation by the federal government over the states. In United States versus Anthony, they cleared it up. The 14th Amendment. The rights of citizens, wait a minute, what did I just do? I got lost. The 14th Amendment defines and declares who shall be citizens of the United States and protects only such rights as are people belonging to persons as citizens of the United States and not rights belonging to persons as a citizen of a state. But I got misdirected here. Blair versus Ridgely, it said, quite clearly, prior to the adoption of the federal Constitution, states possessed unlimited and unrestricted sovereignty and retained the same afterwards. Upon entering the Union, that would be translating, that would be the first part of it is the Articles of Confederation. Because the Articles of Confederation was when we translated from being colonists or having colonies to being having several states, the Articles of Confederation. But 10 years later, there was 10 years between the Articles of Confederation and the adoption of a Constitution for the United States of America. There was 10 years spread. And that wasn't a new document. It was an amended document. They amended the Articles of Confederation and renamed it. It's kind of like when you get, you know, you're born with a name, but when you're baptized, in some faiths, you have another name given to you. That's all it is, just renaming the Articles of Confederation to a Constitution for the United States of America. That's all it is. And it says, upon entering the Union, 10 years later, they retained all their original power and sovereignty. There is not one situation where the federal government has any right to come into any of the states and do anything. They have no right. They're allowed to. They're given permission. They're let. They presume it, and they just come in boldly. But they can be stopped anytime by any sheriff that will stop them. Or any governor, for that matter, that will stop them. But they don't, because they're all in on it. So then we go back to what I when I got misdirected, United States versus Anthony. Two comments. The 14th Amendment defines and declares who shall be citizens of the United States and protects only such rights as are rights belonging to persons as a citizen of the United States. It has nothing to do with the rights belonging to the persons as a citizen of a state. That's what the 14th Amendment is. The 14th Amendment was created only for the purpose of giving a new class of citizen who, by the 13th Amendment, was freed, not constitutional rights, but civil rights. And then continuing with United States versus Anthony, quote, the rights of citizens of the state, as such, are not under consideration in the 14th Amendment. They stand as they did before the adoption of the 14th Amendment and are fully guaranteed by other provisions. Yeah, other provisions like the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, the Constitution for the United States of America, the Bill of Rights, the Northwest Ordinance. All of those documents are other provisions. They so cavalierly write out. Madden versus Kentucky, 1940. Now we're coming up. This court declared in the slaughterhouse cases that the 14th Amendment, as well as the 13th and the 15th, were adopted to protect the Negroes in their freedom. What happened? Why doesn't somebody put this in the newspaper? Headlines. Again, the court declared in the slaughterhouse cases that the 14th Amendment, as well as the 13th and the 15th, were adopted to protect who? Negroes, black folk, Americans of African descent. And they couldn't protect them with constitutional rights because it wasn't their birthright. They were protected with civil rights. Van Valkenburg versus Brown, 43, California. This is 1872. Quote, no white person born within the limits of the United States and subject to their jurisdiction, or born without those limits and subsequently naturalized under their laws, owes his status of citizenship to the recent amendments to the federal Constitution. My heart be still. Who is this racist that would say something like no white person? Today, we have that knee-jerk reaction about anyone that delineates between Americans of European descent and Americans of African descent as being racist. But I guess in 1872, it was all right in state cases to identify some people being white and some people not. Quote, it is claimed that the plaintiff is a citizen of the United States and of this state. Now, this state is capitalized. So that means it's one of the 50 states of the United States, not to be confused with one of the 50 Union states. Undoubtedly, she is. It is argued that she became such by force of the first section of the 14th Amendment already recited. This, however, is a mistake. It could as well be claimed that she became free by the effect of the 13th Amendment, by which slavery was abolished. For she was no less a citizen then, she was free before the adoption of either of those amendments. No white person born within the limits of the United States, in this case meaning the several states, and subject to their jurisdiction, or born without those limits, and subsequently naturalized under their laws, owes their status of citizenship to the recent amendments to the federal Constitution. It's restating it again. Continues, the history and the aim of the 14th Amendment is well known, and the purpose had in view in its adoption well understood. That purpose was to confer the status of citizenship upon a numerous class of persons, not people, persons, domiciled within the limits of the United States, or who could not be brought within the operation of the naturalization laws because native-born, at whose birth, though native, had at the same time left them without the status of citizenship. What it was saying is that the American of African descent was only entitled to the 14th Amendment citizenship. But that can be corrected when you correct your political citizenship status to claim to be a citizen of one of the several states. And we'll show you in the definition, maybe not tonight, but sometime. Well, we can tonight if you want to go there. Dred Scott versus Sanford. Oh, one of my favorite cases. 19 Howard, 393. Quote, these persons were not white persons, but were in the main persons of African descent who had been in slavery in this country, or if having themselves never been held in slavery, were the native-born descendants of slaves. Prior to the adoption of the 14th Amendment, was settled that neither slaves nor those who had been such, nor the descendants of these, though native and freeborn, were capable of becoming citizens of the United States of America. Again, meaning the several states. They're not possible to come into it. And that's Dred Scott. Again, Valkenburg versus Brown. We cited this earlier, this court case, but not this part of it. The 13th Amendment, though conferring the boon of freedom upon native-born persons of African blood, had yet left them under an insuperable bar as to citizenship. And it was mainly to remedy this condition that the 14th Amendment was adopted, to give them citizenship. Plessy versus Ferguson. This is 1896. Quote, the proper construction of this amendment was first called to the attention of this court in the slaughterhouse cases, 16 Wall, 36, which involved, however, not a question of race, but one of the exclusive privileges. The case did not call for any expression of opinion as to the exact rights it was intended to secure to the colored race, but it was said generally that its main purpose was to establish citizenship of the Negro, to give definitions of citizenship of the United States and of the states, and to protect from the hostile legislation of the several states the privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States as being distinguished from those of citizens of the states. This was Plessy versus Ferguson, which overruled on other grounds Brown versus the Board of Education, 1954. In Maxwell versus Dow, where the plaintiff in error had been convicted in a state court of a felony upon an information and by a jury of 8 persons, it was held that the indictment made indispensable by the Fifth Amendment and the trial by jury guaranteed by the Sixth Amendment were not privileges and immunities of citizens of the United States, as those words are used in the 14th Amendment. What? It's saying that 14th Amendment citizens are not guaranteed the right to trial by jury. They're not guaranteed the Fourth Amendment to be protected in their rights of their papers in private. I mean, just go. 14th Amendment citizens don't have constitutional rights, folks. In Twining versus State of New Jersey, 211 U.S., 78, 98, 99. This is a 1908 decision. I guess I should wrap it up because we're getting closer to the hour and we want to open it up for Q&A, hopefully. The discussion in that case ought not to be repeated. All the arguments for the other view were considered and answered. The authorities were examined and analyzed, and the decision rested upon the grounds that this clause of the 14th Amendment did not forbid the states to abridge the personal rights enumerated in the first eight amendments, because those rights were not within the meaning of the clause, privileges, and immunities of citizens of the United States. It's telling you right there, your constitutional rights do not exist if you allow them to assert that you're a 14th Amendment and you don't rebut it. You're a 14th Amendment citizen. It continues, if it be possible to render the principle which governed this decision more clear, it is done so by the dissent of Mr. Justice Harlan. Oh, we know Mr. Justice Harlan. We quote him almost every call. We conclude, therefore, that the exemption from compulsory self-incrimination is not a privilege or immunity of national citizenship guaranteed by this clause of the 14th Amendment against abridgment by the states. Wow. These court cases, these court cases are what teach you. Not GW, not John or Michael or anybody else. Court cases teach you. Let the judges teach you. Because that's the best fun, is throwing it back in their face in your pleadings, in your briefs, in your filings. Jones versus Temer, 829 F. Supp., 1226, quote, the Privileges and Immunities Clause of the 14th Amendment protects very few rights because it neither incorporates any of the Bill of Rights nor protects all rights of individual citizens. See Slaughterhouse Cases 83, U.S. 16 Law. Instead, this provision protects only those rights peculiar to being a citizen of the federal government. It does not protect these rights, which relate to state citizenship. Accordingly, it is not necessary that plaintiffs have non-resident status in order to bring a claim under the Privileges and Immunity Clause of the 14th Amendment. I'm going to stop here. I could go on for another hour with court cases, and probably we'll pick up where I left off tonight, next week, to continue this understanding. But the bottom line is this. If you've corrected your political citizenship status, that's step one. And you can't go back to sleep now. You got to start reading. You got to start attending these calls, listening to the archives. And when you find yourself in a position, your Tuesday night call with John is now mandatory for your education, because you're going to hear the direct application and legal proceedings with John regarding your political citizenship status. John won't even take on a new student unless they've corrected their political citizenship status. Because if you don't, you lose. If you do, you win. Now, if you're going to win, you're going to have to fight. It's not an easy thing, but it's better than losing. All right, Martin, I think I've run my mouth enough. Why don't you open up the call to questions and answers?
All right, star two on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. That's for everybody that's on the call with us. If you dialed in a number and you put in a PIN, you're on the call with us. Star two at this time to raise your hand. For everybody else listening at freedomsradio.com, type your questions in the question bar this time and click submit. First question comes from Tripp in Virginia. Go
Hello,
ahead, Tripp.
Thank you. Hello, thank you. Michael, quick question. Earlier you mentioned the difference between rights and privileges with the capital S in states and the lower S in states.
Yes.
Could you recap that for a second, if you could?
Recap it? Sure.
Yes.
Okay. So when the word citizen is written down and it's with an uppercase C, I'm talking about in legal proceedings. I'm not talking about what you're writing. I'm talking about in cases before the Civil War, you will see citizen with a capital C, because before the Civil War, there just weren't any federal citizens per se. That they weren't in litigation. So anytime there was litigation that involved a citizen, which was frequently, the C was always capitalized. And then after the Civil War, they began not capitalizing them. Because at that time, there was a question only by a few as to which class of citizenship they were talking about. There were Americans of European descent that paid the 14th Amendment, as my mom used to say and grandma, no, never mind. No, never mind. Okay? Because they knew who they were by their birthright. It wasn't that long before that their grandparents or great-grandparents, whatever, had fought in the war with Britain for independence. They still had stories going on, first-hand stories, just repeated a couple generations back. So they understood they had constitutional rights. They understood those rights came from the creator of the universe, and there was no nonsense about it. It was very difficult to mess over with a citizen with an uppercase C at that time. But it only took a couple generations of planned ignorance through the public school system for the loss of communication between generations and families for that whole thing to be lost. And lowercase c came out, and basically that's someone with civil rights as a federal citizen versus an uppercase C with constitutional rights as a citizen of one of the several states. And I go to the trouble of expressing it in several words, because the word state can be one of the union states, the several states in the union, perpetual union, or the word state can apply to a state of the United States. You got to make the declaration patently, blatantly obvious. And then your other question, well, I think we just answered it about state. So did I answer your question, Duncan?
You did, thank you. You did. Okay. So when we correct our status, we want to return to the capital C in citizen.
Right, right. However, when you have new students who have corrected their status, we're on them, pardon the expression, like white on rice, because that's tantamount to watching a toddler fidgeting with a loaded cocked revolver on the floor. They have all this power, imminent power, right in front of them, in their hands, and something deadly can come out of it. So we want to, once somebody has corrected their political citizenship status, we want to make sure that they hobble themselves. They put a bit in their own mouth to restrain themselves. It's kind of like if you have someone who is a student in martial arts and they get really, really, really good, they have no problem walking away from a fight. There's no ego involved. You know, the guy can be 100 pounds greater than them and have bulging muscles and all that other good stuff, and they don't mind bowing down and walking away and say, please, please don't hurt me, and walk away, not fight them. Why? Because they know that they can separate the kneecap with just one well-aimed sidekick. They can crush the larynx, jam the Adam's apple into the windpipe. They can do anything they want to do to that big monster guy who's a bully. But they can also walk away. They can afford to walk away. It's like there was an old Volkswagen commercial back in the 70s showed this German duke, you know, with this palatial home that he lived in. And there was all these beautiful Bentleys and Rolls and all the stuff in his yard that were his guests. And he drove up in a Volkswagen, whatever the newest model was at that time, back in the 70s. And somebody said, "Dude, you can afford all of these." And he said, "Yeah, but I can also afford not to. I choose to afford this because," and he goes into the how well it's made. You can afford not to. So that's the whole thing. But once you've corrected your political citizenship status, now you've really got to start learning what's going on and how to not handle it on the side of the road, but how to handle it in the courtroom. And that's what we have the team for. So, anyways, back to you, sir.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Good question.
Did that question? All right, very good then. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have a question. Star 2 at this time to raise your hand. For everybody else listening at the freedomsradio.com, type your questions in the question bar at this time and click submit.
While we're waiting for this to populate, before you get to Brother Kirk, I want to repeat what I said earlier tonight when we opened the call and at the beginning of the Q&A. GW is cutting back from his appearances on these calls to once a month, only because last week there were no questions. And I understand he is in perfect position to feel this way. If he's no longer really required here, then he doesn't have to be here, and let Michael Edward lift the load, because that's what I do. And he will be here the last Monday of every month, just as a matter of staying in the flow of things. Anyone who does correct their political citizenship status, the service is no different than prior to him changing the frequency of his appearance here on these Monday night calls, so that if you decide to correct your status, the first part is on my shoulders to produce the proper affidavit for you, to get it notarized, to get you prepared to have the conversation with GW. Or if you want to have a private conference with him regardless anyways, it doesn't matter, I'll set that up. You can have a private conference with him before you even correct your political citizenship status. It's just that he's not going to be here except for the last Monday of every month, okay? Back to you, Martin.
Okay. all right, we want to go ahead and open it up for Kirk.
Yeah, go with Kirk and then Bruce.
Okay. All right, go ahead, Kirk.
Thank you, Martin, Michael. How much does this process cost? Can you briefly go over what the paperwork is that you've got to do?
Sure.
And...
sure.
Okay.
The cost is $5,000. The length of time it takes is anywhere from 3 weeks to 3 months. There is a shortcut available if you want to go through that shortcut. It doesn't cost you any more, but 3 weeks to 3 months is the typical journey. And the process is a one-page affidavit. You create 5-6 originals. These affidavits, you have your signature notarized 5 or 6 times. You send me a copy of the cover sheet and the affidavit, which I've given you. I've filled it all out. It's just a matter of you having it notarized and then sending it to me. You send it in an envelope, usually a priority mail envelope or a brown envelope that's 8.5 by 11. I don't want it folded or crinkled, please. And then I forward that to a unique place in the State Department of the United States. And then once that has been done and it's been allowed to season for, you know, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever, after I've sent it, then I will have create a set an appointment with you with a representative of the State Department of the United States. You will then have two phone calls with GW, one any time that we've got all the paperwork and everything together, it's been completed. You'll have your first one, first conference call with them. And then the second conference call is almost always the night before your meeting, your appointment with a representative of the State Department of the United States, and that's just to do a refresher of the first conference that you had with GW. He covers all the different tricks that they may try to play with you. And that's basically it. Then
excuse me for interrupting.
No, go ahead. This
meeting, is it, you say it's with the State Department. And,
a representative of the State Department is what I said.
Oh, right, okay. And so is the purpose of the meeting for them to challenge you to see if you know what you're talking about?
Nah, sometimes. You know, in every institution, you've got somebody that wants to play good cop, bad cop, and be the bad cop.
Okay.
It doesn't matter. Some people, they have their own little fiefdom. Why would you want to do this? You know, or whatever. They'll come up with all sorts of, and GW is going to cover that with you.
Okay.
But it's not necessarily. I've had people sit there. They've handed their paperwork in. The clerk says, thank you. Stamped it, took it, and they left. It was over. And then 3 weeks to 3 months later, they got in the mail on two separate postings. They got the new passport, and they got the new pass card. They looked identical to the old passport and pass card. But they're not. Different numbers. And when the mag strip on the pass card is pulled through the reader inside the police officer's car, you'll get a red flag immediately. Gets them all excited. We got somebody. Maybe I can draw my gun. And then it says, do not investigate, do not detain. Release immediately. Lifetime concealed carry weapons permit. If they don't, we've had officers that sit there and say, I can't use that. Where's your driver's license? And they won't get off that. So, well, officer, I don't have a driver's license. And so if you need to write me a ticket, whatever it is that you need to do, that's fine with me. You got a hard job. I'm not going to sit here and make it any harder for you. Then settle it in court. There's paperwork that you can have to deal with. Bring the team on. Okay.
Thank you for that. Mm-hmm. Hey, I got another question or a statement, I guess. I read something one time, it's been a long time ago, that if you get pulled over, like you say, don't argue with them, just take the ticket and move on.
Right.
Well, then you've got to do something. Either you got to pay it or you've got to... you've got to go to the court and see if you can get it reduced or something like that.
Let me interject here, okay? Take it from there.
Okay.
So where John has in the past been recalcitrant to move forward into a Title 42, 1983, I think that he's about ready to turn the corner on just making that an automatic Title 42, 1983 against a law enforcement officer that stopped you and ticketed you. And then the next thing that you're going to do is, as a student, next thing that I would do were I similarly situated, I got to phrase this directly because I don't want to be somebody accusing me of practicing law without a license. the next thing that I would do is notice, send a copy of the affidavit of my political citizenship status to the prosecutor and to the clerk of court of the traffic division, along with a copy of the ticket, and just simply say to them in a nice cover letter something to the effect of, charges applied against my name are under the presumption that I'm a federal citizen, engaging in the practice of driving, which is a privilege granted to federal citizens. I am not a federal citizen, as you can see by this affidavit, and I am enjoying the right to travel. Also, as a notice enclosed, a copy of the federal lawsuit, Title 42, 1983, against Officer Smith, who arrested me, because when they turned the lights on and pulled you over, you were arrested. They'll tell you that you weren't. You can be detained. Then you have other words, but you were arrested. And so you're going to show them that, and leave it up to them to figure out whether they're going to drop the charges or not, or discharge the charges. But when you appear in court with your first appearance, how do you plead? At that time, you turn to the prosecutor. I would turn to the prosecutor and say, am I adding another name to this federal lawsuit? Am I amending it? Because you know better. You should know better. So where are we going? What are you going to do now? And the judge is listening to this conversation. He's already looked at that federal lawsuit of a law enforcement officer. He hears you telling the prosecutor, the prosecutor's next. The judge may just sit there and say, approach the bench. And the prosecutor and you approach the bench, and the judge may say to the prosecutor, I see where this is going. I don't believe jurisdiction is established. Right now you have standing to be included in a federal lawsuit for deprivation of rights under color of law. But if you were to dismiss this case, you would no longer have standing to be sued in federal court. That's what the judge might say to the prosecutor, trying to help him out, the thick-skulled cretin. And if he doesn't, you know the judge is going to, if the judge has made that kind of conversation so far. The judge is not stupid. He wants to keep his tenure. Back to you, Kirk.
Well, there's a third option, and that is because when you sign that piece of paper, it's a contract. You know that.
What piece of paper? The ticket?
Yeah.
Oh, just sign. When you sign your name, sign my name, comma, non-assumpt, N-O-N hyphen, A-S-S-U-M-P-T-S-O-N, non-assumpt. Something like
okay,
that.
Okay. Well, I don't know that yet, but the thing is, it's a contract, and you got 72 hours to back out of a contract. So if you take that ticket to the courthouse, you're supposed to be able to say, I rescind my signature on this thing and hand it back to them. You might be able to do it with a notary and send it in the mail, and then don't even go to court.
Yeah. So really the bottom line to everything in every court action is establishing jurisdiction. And,
right.
And the thing is that the way that I'm proposing, the way that I believe John will be doing this in the future, is the way that makes it very clear about jurisdiction to now the law officer knows, and he's going to start telling his friends, hey, be careful, you're going to get sued in federal court for just pulling somebody over and giving them a speeding ticket when they're not a federal citizen. Look, that's what I learned. And then the prosecutor, he's basically going to do the same thing. John told us he's in Texas, and John said that there is a city in Texas that will not give speeding tickets. Or no, not speeding tickets, not to have a driver's license. They won't give it. If you don't have a driver's license, they will not ticket you for it. You know that?
Yeah. Yeah. I've heard that. The thing about her driver's license is people want it for identification downtown. You know,
well, what's better, a driver's license or a real ID Act identification from the State Department of the United States?
Oh, well, they probably wouldn't recognize it.
Well, that's their problem.
But, yeah, I know, but I'm just, most people, and it would be nice for that purpose is to just have it for identification, you know, because the banks see it. They see the same one because everybody from that state comes, you know, gets a driver's license. And it would be nice if you had one of those for identification, but they didn't have any of the other strings attached. Because
well,
just, so I don't know if you can get those.
Well, I think there's something to address on that. I'm looking for it right now. I hope I find it quickly so that we can.
The other thing is you're supposed to be driving responsibly.
Of course.
And not get into too many of those, you know, traffic pullovers.
Right. All right, let me see if I can do it this way. Find.
You know, we're not teenagers anymore.
Well, as I'm fond of repeating, my brain writes checks, my body can't cash. All right, WW Cargill Company versus State of Minnesota, 180 U.S. 452. This is a 1901 decision. Quote, the acceptance of a license in whatever form will not impose upon the licensee an obligation to respect or to comply with any provision of the statute or with the regulations prescribed that are repugnant to the Constitution of the United States, end quote. So if you want to get a driver's license, go ahead.
Right.
Got nothing. Doesn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah. Well, it would just be nice to have something like that for you know, you could always pull your passport out, but a lot of people are not familiar with them.
Right.
And so they go to, you know, they always ask you for a driver's license.
Right.
I've given them the library card before. I was working in New York and gave them my welding certification card at the bank. And, you know, and gave them my paycheck. I want cash.
Yeah.
And they cash it. I mean, it was, yeah. Now they don't do that. That was a long time ago. But.
Yeah. I remember when my daddy ordered my first long gun through the Sears and Roebuck catalog, and it came in the mail. And you know, the guy knocked on the door and gave it to my dad, this big long thing. And then, my proudest moment was when, cause we had, you know, we were a small quarter horse ranch. He mounted it underneath the, his Marlin, 30-06 that he had. He mounted it underneath that. And there it was on what he referred to as the Easy Rider rifle rack on the back of his truck windshield. You didn't drive to school with it and everything. Nobody cared.
Yeah. Nowadays you don't do it. That's, you know, people, if you didn't get pulled over by the police, somebody'd steal them.
Right. All right. Nice talking to you, Kurt.
All right. Thanks.
All right. Martin? Wakey, wakey.
Yes, can you hear me?
Hear you now. Helps on you, doesn't it?
Yes. Sorry to you. Thank you.
can't tell you how many times I do that.
Yeah. Star 2 on your keypad, folks, if you have any final questions, or type it in on the Freedoms Radio side. Bruce in Texas. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. You were listing off a bunch of cases in regards to the 14th Amendment earlier. I'm just wondering where you're pulling that list of cases from, or is that just something that we do a search, end up at the Cornell Law School legal information listing, or what are y'all referring to get those cases to go to learn more about it?
Those cases came from a researcher that it will be coming a member of our team post reevaluation. There's so much we're going to be doing after the RV. So many people we're going to be bringing on board when we can afford it. If you email me a request for that, for those that I gave you on the call tonight that I read from, I'll be glad to copy and paste it back in an email to you and give it to you.
Awesome. That'd be great.
Aren't I a sweetheart?
You're a gem. Thank you.
Yeah. Anything else, Bruce?
Nope, that was it.
Thank you so much. Well, I believe that's probably going to take care of us, Mr. Everett.
Wonderful. So what's on tomorrow night?
Tomorrow night we'll be back again, same time, same place, for our Tuesday night call with Brother John. We'll be doing litigation, tip of the spear. And then we'll be back again on Wednesday night for our normal call on the LLCs. Which, of course, is a springboard into the Saturday night call on your charitable religious trusts and whatnot. So,
I see where Charlie just picked up. Can you grab him?
Yeah, absolutely. Let's see here. Charlie. I'm not seeing it now available to me.
All right. I'm going to go ahead and unmute him.
Yes, please.
Sure. Hasn't happened yet. There we go.
Now you can hear me?
Charles?
Yes. Yes, Mom.
You've been a bad boy.
Actually, I had sent this in online because I'm not sure how long I can talk here. But anyway, just a point. The fourth Monday, I got on late, but I did hear your re-announcement that the fourth Monday would be GW would be on to answer questions. And by the way, your content is so great. Just excellent, Silva. Anyway, I'll still be on.
Well, don't tell GW that, because he might say, well, then once a quarter I'll show up.
I won't.
Yeah, really.
The fourth, just to let you know, the fourth Monday in December is Christmas Day. Maybe you could recruit him for the third Monday in December.
Yeah. All right. Thanks for bringing that to my attention.
Yes. Okay. And I'll send you an email. I'd like to hear what I didn't hear and what you did say. So anyway, good stuff. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate you.
Yep.
I'm gonna check Freedom's Radio real quick. Martin seems to have a problem with his machine.
I'm sorry.
Okay. That's all right. We have in Freedom's Radio, as of today, November 6, 2023, I understand GW will now be on the Monday call to answer questions only on the last Monday. Oh, that was somebody else wrote in the same thing you just did. Huh. All right, so that's all that is. Martin, take us home. Thank you all for joining us this evening. I will see you tomorrow night with Brother John, and we will go again with the stomach churns the next episode. Until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.